This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time: baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in baseball isn't boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Reflect those of WSSP, Entercom Milwaukee, its staff, or sponsors.
From Lake Michigan to the Mississippi, and every river, lake, and field in between, let's talk everything outdoors.
All aboard! Ha, ha, ha! You're on the crazy train!
All aboard!
Welcome to the Wacky Walleye Cutting Edge Outdoors Show. Fasten your seatbelts for a wild ride through Wisconsin's outdoors. Only on 1250 AM, The Fan.
Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Wacky Walleye's Cutting Edge Outdoors with Dan Bush and myself, Tom Neubauer. We're glad that you're with us this morning. And, you know, today is the first day of spring. And you know what? It's going to feel like spring today. So, anyway, hop on board the crazy train, folks, because we do this every Saturday morning from 6 to 8 a.m., and we are live. And if you want to have any, you know, if you got any questions or comments, you can call us at 799-1250. That's 414-799-1250. Or you can always email us live at ceoguys@yahoo.com. Good morning, Danny.
Good morning, Tom.
You got your microphone, you got your phone all set there, whatever?
Well, we were having a little bit of a feedback issue before, but it seems to be okay now.
Yeah? Well, that's good. Yeah. Good to hear.
Technical difficulties.
Well,
not quite what you have with your flip phone there, but...
I never have any difficulties with that.
Yeah.
I'm not even on my flip phone.
Oh, what are you on now?
I'm on my home phone.
Oh, you've actually got a landline yet?
Oh, yeah. You betcha.
Oh, my God.
Well, the thing is, what I do is, you know, when I got my cell phone, it was basically just for work, okay? So when I got home at around 4 o'clock, I'd turn it off. And then, you know, you know that, too. Like, people know that during the day, they call my cell phone, and after 4 o'clock, they call my home phone. So,
well,
and I still do that. I turn it off. Yeah.
You don't normally answer either one, actually.
Well, I am a busy fella, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Got places to go, people to meet, things to do.
So. It's rough moving between the recliner and the remote stand.
Yeah. Hey, listen, Danny, we got an email. You and I talked about it a little bit yesterday, but up there on the Bay of Green Bay, 13 people in an ice fishing party were rescued this past Monday by a combined effort of local fire departments, U.S. Coast Guard, and Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources after the ice that they were on broke away from the shore. It's the second mass rescue in the same area off the Door County shore in little more than a month. Back on February 4th, high winds saw 66 people stranded in three separate ice floes on the bay, some nearly 2 miles out. Well, it took an effort of all three departments to get these 13 people back on shore. So everybody was safe. Nobody got wet, you know. So, but still, you know, like you and I said yesterday, the fish are not worth it. You know, it's not worth risking your life to catch a few stupid fish, you know?
Well, I think what you might have going on, Tom, is you might have some guides that still are operating, and it's a lot of money that they get paid to get people out there, and And they go by what their judgment is, and sometimes it may not be the best. Now, I'm not sure if there were guides involved and which ones, but if you go to social media, the Fishing Report sites, they pretty much block the reports now that have any guides' names or anything like that. And the reason that the moderator puts in there is that they don't want rumors and this and that going on and on. Now, in a sense, it almost does kind of look like maybe there's a little CYA going on and, you know, trying to keep, you know, keep any bad publicity from getting out there. But, yeah, I think it's going to get to a position where I think eventually they may have to start, I don't know, if billing people for the rescue. That would make people think twice if they're going to get charged to have people go out there and get you. That might get people thinking twice about it.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea.
The other question that I've heard raised by some is, to guide on the Lake Michigan Bay of Green Bay, typically you need to have your captain's license. Well, I've heard the issue kind of raised by some that perhaps that's not required for people who are guiding people on the ice, and if not, maybe it should be required. That's just, I heard somebody speculating about that. I don't know whether or not you're supposed to have a captain's license to guide on the ice on the Bay of Green Bay or not. I really don't know how they would define that. Obviously, open water, and I've got my captain's license, Tom, but if I take you out ice fishing, I'm not going to get you stranded on an ice floe, I'll tell you that much.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, maybe on second thought.
Thanks a lot.
How long would it take Tom to die of exposure floating on an iceberg from here up to Escanaba, Michigan?
Yeah, we could make a movie out of it. They made a movie out of that, Escanaba in the Moonlight. Was about deer hunting.
Well, you know, it'd be kind of like the walrus that they found in Ireland. I don't know if you heard this one.
No.
I think it was Ireland. I want to say it was, yeah, I think it was there. Or Green, I don't know. Somewhere in Europe, a walrus showed up. First time in the country ever. Some little kid spotted it with her daddy out on the beach and go, "Daddy, look, here comes a seal." And out comes this giant walrus. And they can only speculate that the thing fell asleep on an ice floe, and then the ice floe broke off and drifted way south. And when the walrus woke up from his nap, there was no land in sight. So finally he made a break for it, and he swam. And they said the walrus looked exhausted when it hit the shore. So, yeah, you'd be like that walrus on the ice floe. Floating north, man.
Yeah, there's a big difference between a seal and a walrus, you know, size-wise. Yeah.
I'm guessing maybe about 1,000 pounds, maybe.
Oh, yeah, there's a good 1,000 pounds difference. Yeah, you better believe it.
Yeah,
Yeah,
go ahead.
I was going to say, I got your email about from your brother Tim.
Yes, I got an email from... Well, first of all, 7 o'clock today, we are going to have a report from Jim up at the fishing barge in Alma on the Mississippi River. Their season opened yesterday, and so I'll kind of save that report for when we get to it. He was talking to me live, and people were catching fish. Pretty exciting. And then I got the email from my brother Tim, because I talked, I think, on the show last week, how my brother-in-law had whacked a bunch of perch on a barge one time. Well, ever since that time, oh my God, he's all over it. And the season on the barges actually opened yesterday on the 19th. So the one in Alma opened yesterday, and the one in Genoa, which is Clements. Now, I believe that's the one that my brother-in-law Forrest was on with my nephews. And right around 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I got the text, and they did in fact get their limit of perch yesterday. It's 15 per person. And my brother said they weren't as huge as when they got their limit years ago, but they were all a bunch of nice ones. Now, Randy Reading, in the meantime, he sent me an email and a picture. One of his friends was supposedly in Genoa, I'm guessing maybe on the same barge or at least that same part of the river, and he got was whacking a bunch of big perch yesterday too. So good reports right off the bat as far as fishing up there on those barges.
Yeah, that sounds great. Hey, I gotta let you know too. If I doze off during the show, that's I'm not making a disparaging remark on you or anything, but I was up this morning at 3:30. I could not sleep. I woke up, you know, had one of those weird dreams, woke up and could not sleep. So I've been up since 3:30 this morning.
Well, that's okay, Tom. I've been up since 4. I get up at 4 for the show every Saturday.
You get up at 4 o'clock?
Yeah, 4 o'clock. I put the coffee on, and then I lay in bed, and I listen to a little bit of Coast to Coast, see if I get some more Bigfoot or alien information. Slowly drink my coffee, check my text messages, and slowly come to life. I'm kind of like a waxworm that just came out of the refrigerator, and you put it on the picnic table in the sun, and it slowly starts to wiggle and move, and after about an hour, it's moving fast. Well, that's me in the morning. I'm on a waxworm schedule.
Yeah, I got a fishing report for us later. You know, it's so funny. It seems like this time of year, when the ice leaves these shallow backwater bays, you know, sometimes you get these bays on lakes here, little bays, you know, and they're shallow. It seems like as soon as the ice leaves, there's fish there. And then after about 2 or 3 weeks, there's no fish there. And then once the water starts warming up, then there's fish there again, you know. I have no explanation why, but I do have a fishing report that, I don't know where he went. My son Nick went on his kayak someplace, and, you know, he likes fishing out of that kayak. And he was catching bluegills, crappies, perch, and there were game fish busting the shallow water trying to eat the smaller ones. But he caught some nice fish, you know. So, you know, but he won't tell me, Danny. Because he thinks I got a big mouth. I might say something on the radio.
The strangest phenomenon I ever saw years ago, it was about this time of year, and I was walking out of Smokey's Muskie Shop and with John, and there were guys fishing on the pier right there, and the guy's pulling up an enormous crappie. And I walked over, and they had a bucket full of big crappies. I'm not just talking Joe average size crappies, big crappies. And they whacked them. And then when I went back to my place over here on the east end of the lake and looked on out into the shallows, it was full. It was full of baitfish, panfish. I mean, it was just swarms. And what caused those swarms to come to the shoreline like that for that couple day period, I've never seen it like that prior, and I've never seen it like that since. But it was crazy. They were all big crappies. I don't know what environmental conditions caused that. It was just an anomaly. So sometimes you see things happen that you really can't put your finger on it.
Yeah, and that's why I've always said, if you try to outthink a fish, you're going to lose. Because sometimes they just do the darndest things, you know. We got another email coming in quick about bucktails. This is from Chip. He says, hey, guys, can you fish a bucktail deep for walleye, maybe down 35 feet? I was thinking of giving it a shot on Lake Erie. Love the show, from Chip in Erie, Pennsylvania. Oh, somebody listening to us in Erie. Well, Chip, yes, you can fish a bucktail down deep. You just got to weight it, that's all. Will it be good for walleye? I don't know. What do you think, Danny?
I guess if you were going to try and get a walleye, one of the smaller MEPs, inline spinner, you know, like a number 4, number 5. Now, you could clip it to a downrigger and put it down that way. I know... I think Steve Milliot many years ago actually used a downrigger and a bucktail down deep on Pewaukee. So you could actually do that. Other methods, I guess, you'd have to try and weight it. Probably a lead core line.
Yeah.
But again, I think you're better off. I'm not the walleye trolling expert, but when I went with Dan Johnson years ago, it was a deep diving crankbait bite. And we trolled the baits down about 20 feet. Or he did have some lead core bait casters and crawler harnesses. So he would alternate between the two.
Yeah.
But who knows?
I was going to say there's no problem getting a bait down deep, but the minnow imitating lures, I think, would be a better bet than maybe a bucktail. But then again, Chip, why not give it a shot, you know? See, who knows? See what happens.
You never know.
You never know what might work. Well, listen, with that, we got to go to a quick break. We'll be right back right here at the Wacky Walleye's Cutting Edge Outdoors on 1250 AM, The Fan.
Welcome back to the Wacky Walleye's Cutting Edge Outdoors, and if you don't think we have some good fishing reports today, you got another thing coming, my friend. So, morning there, Tom.
Hey, Danny. You know, I was thinking everybody is getting these stimulus checks coming in, right?
Yes.
Now, let's face it, there's a lot of people who don't really need it because they never lost their jobs in the first place, but they're getting it too. So, it's like, folks, I mean, I don't know, maybe this is a silly idea, but I was thinking, you know, if you get a stimulus check and you don't really need it, how about thinking about donating some of it? You know, like maybe like Salvation Army, Children's Hospital, St. Jude's Hospital, food banks, you know, whatever charity that you like, how about just, you know, using some of that for a good cause if you don't need it? Now, if you need it, of course, don't do it, but you know, let's face it, there's a lot of people who are getting checks who really don't need them. This would be a good way of getting some of that money out to places who do need it. So what do you think? Think it's a good idea?
I don't know. Is that what you did with yours, Tom?
Some of it.
You did?
Yeah.
Wow, that's really admirable of you. Yeah, I think, well, you know, giving shouldn't be just a one-time thing. I think all of us can give more. My dad always believed in the biblical principle. He always gave a tenth of his net income went to the church. He lived that way his whole life, and we never lacked for bread on the table. So yeah, I think that's a good idea. And the only problem with the stimulus is, you know, sure, everybody was happy to get that money. It's all the spending they did on all those other things. It really was a Trojan horse as far as getting us sold. Oh, okay, I'll get that $1,400. Wheel that horse right in here. But nobody even cares to look at what's inside that horse.
Yeah, you know, if you ask somebody what $1 billion is, they go, oh, they look at you kind of funny and say, well, it's $1,000 million. And then you ask somebody, what's $1 trillion? They got a blank stare on their face. Well, $1 trillion is $1,000 billion, you know, and this last stimulus package was almost $2 trillion. And you know who's paying for that? We are, the taxpayers. So basically, we're getting our money back that we're putting in. I mean, it's
yeah. Well, I'm sure a lot of people are using their stimulus to not only do good deeds with charity, but to go buy that new shotgun they've been wanting, or that new fishing rod and reel they've been wanting, which, by the by, it's still hard to come by, not only just firearms and ammo, but fishing tackle. I mean, it seems like everything is, you know, you got to try and get it while you can. Fishing line. Get your line now if you see it on the store shelf, because it might not be there in a week.
That's the tough stuff to get, is the fishing line. My goodness. I mean, I've had empty hooks over there at Sherper's since last summer. I can't get it. You know, I keep ordering it, but they don't have any. I don't know what those places are doing, but I know it's got to do with the COVID and the reduced amount of employees, and they can't get their products to make and whatever, but still, yeah, it's crazy. It is crazy. So
definitely is. And hunting report, I guess one of our listeners, Jacob, had contacted me about going up about a week ago or so and possibly doing some snowshoe hare hunting with him and his dad. And the report that he came back with was no snowshoes. They just saw some cottontails, which cottontails ended at the end of February, where snowshoes, they're open. They're kind of like coyotes. They're open year-round all the time. But Jacob was the one who hooked me up with Jim on that float up in Alma. So thanks to him, we'll be able to get that report up there today. Turkey hunting, if you want to try and get a... If you didn't put in for a turkey tag, they do have leftover ones. But I went online on Monday, Tom, and they've got, I want to say they got four or five zones, maybe A, B, C, D, E, or one, yeah. Two, yeah, I think one, two, three, four, whatever. And pretty much the only tags that are available are for like the mid-March to the end of March, those last 2 weeks. And there's thousands of those available yet. So it's almost like you don't even need to bother to try and get one, even though they are available, because there's so many of them. You can probably wait till May and still get one. And for the zones that, you know, for the earlier weeks in all the zones, there's nothing available now. So it's kind of a moot point to try and get that extra tag now. I guess if you plan on hunting prior to, you know, late May for turkeys, I guess it does behoove you in the fall of the year to put in and try and get the tag beforehand so you can hunt early in one of those zones.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, I got a question for you, Danny. Have you ever heard of a mean-mouth bass?
A mean-mouth bass, no.
Yeah, mean-mouth bass.
I had a buddy years ago, he had a girlfriend, I made the mistake of saying she looked like a largemouth bass, and that dummy, he had to go and tell her that, so that girl hated me forever. Yep.
Well,
but no, mean-mouth bass.
Mean-mouth bass, it's a cross between a largemouth and a smallmouth. It's pretty rare, but it happens down in like Alabama, Georgia area, those states down there. It is rare, but it does happen, and well, they don't get to the size of largemouth, but they get to the size of, you know, big smallmouth.
And they
kind of look a little bit like both, like a little bit of a largemouth and a smallmouth. It's kind of like a bronze smallmouth with bass-like stripes, you know, a stripe going down the side of it, you know. It's weird, yeah, it's weird.
Well, I mean, does it happens by accident in nature?
Yeah, okay. By accident, yeah.
By accident.
Yeah,
okay.
And maybe
but
down
evidently,
there where the waters are warmer, they warm up quicker or something. I don't know. Maybe the smallmouth gets lost and spawns a little later. The largemouth spawn a little earlier, and then they hook up, you know, and whatever.
One Alabama cousin meets the other Alabama cousin,
yeah.
And they, yeah.
Yeah, so and they those, call them mean-mouth bass.
And so those cousin bass, smallmouth and largemouth hook up. But don't they have different spawning habitats, though? Don't
well,
largemouth,
yeah.
don't smallies use rocky areas? Am I correct on that?
Well,
or wrong?
Well,
no,
not,
no, they
always,
use beds.
But yeah, generally a gravelly, well, actually sandy, loamy areas.
Okay.
They can spawn in the mud too, you know. I mean, it's whatever they got available, kind of like with walleyes. But they both will spawn in the same. As a matter of fact, to give you an example, on some of the lakes that I fish in the spring, you'll have smallmouth spawning in, let's say, along a shoreline, and 3-4 weeks later, you got largemouth spawning in that same areas. Sometimes using the same nests, you know. So they're using a lot of the same stuff, you know. A lot of the same stuff around here.
But smallmouths spawn way earlier, correct?
Yeah, a lot earlier, yeah.
So yeah, because when I think a largemouth, then the water's warming up, and then seems like right after the largemouth, that's when I see the panfish. Sometimes at the same time,
Sometimes
right?
same time, yeah, exactly. Exactly.
You'll see them. Yeah, meanmouth bass. Well, I'm guessing that its offspring is sterile, just like a tiger muskie.
You know, that part, they didn't mention that in the article. It's something I'm gonna have to check out, you know.
Is
But
there
that
a
sounds,
world, is
huh?
there a world record for that bass? Do they
Well, from what I read, a guy caught the state, they didn't say which state in the article, which was really weird, but it was either Alabama or Georgia, but they said a guy might have caught the new state record mean mouth. You know, it was, I don't know, 6, 7 pounds, I don't know, something like that.
And I imagine it would be very difficult to tell what the heck it is when you catch it, though.
Yeah, because it looks a little bit like both, you know. It's a little confusing, so yeah. It's just something, I mean, we'll probably never see one up here, but you know, down south they get some weird critters down there, you know, so.
Yeah, and down south now, the bass fishing tournament season is kicked off down there.
Yeah,
So,
bass fishing is good down there. They're spawning down there,
yep,
you
and
know.
our buddy Ron Johnson would have done very well in his first tournament of the year, but he had a little bit of a problem where he the first day he didn't get in under the time when you got to get in with your catch.
Oh
And
no.
yeah, so he was kicking himself on that one. And I'm sure when you were in bass tournaments years ago, Tom, I'm sure that that was probably pretty much the norm that you have to be in by a certain time
Oh
as far
yeah.
as, yeah. I
Yeah, as a
mean,
matter of fact, the person running the tournament would tell everybody set your watches, because this is at a time before cell phones. And he would say, "Set your watches. Here's the time right now." And as a matter of fact, I won a tournament one time because the guy who would have won it, he came in late. And then you had they would dock so much weight for how much time you were, you know, late. And I won because he was late. So that
okay.
was fortunate for me, bad news for him.
Yeah,
So.
I can see that that being a definite problem. But a lot of people well, I know our friend Randy, he likes to watch the tournament bass fishing live. You can find it sometimes and watch these tournaments, and they got some of the bigger tournaments. They got a cameraman right on the, it's kind of like a golf course where they're reporting with all the golfers from all around. And I'm not really into watching it so much, but I guess I guess it could be interesting. I do know that when you are in a tournament, it's exciting being a participant, especially when you're in the thick of it and you think you got a chance to win the thing. That is pretty exciting.
But you know what? It after a while, it's like work, you know.
Yeah, I suppose.
And if it's and you know, the thing is if it turns out not to be fun after a while, then yeah, then why bother, you know? But it's like it can be like work. But
Yeah, I
you
can
know what else
imagine
is
that.
like work?
I
Having to
don't
go to
know.
commercials. We got another commercial coming up, and coming up next after it is the Gut Report. So stay tuned for that, folks. I'm going to teach you how to make something on your own that you would normally buy at the store. So stay tuned for more with Danny Bush, myself, Tom Neubauer, and Sam Schmitz, as always, on the boards right here at the Wacky Walleyes Cutting Edge Outdoors.
Come here, I'm going to eat you. I'm bigger than you. I'm higher in the food chain. Get in my belly.
The Gut Report is brought to you by Discount Liquor. Have you ever wondered how to make your own fresh pasta? Fresh pasta is really good. It cooks up a lot faster than store-bought hard pasta, and it's really simple to make. 2 cups of flour, 2 large eggs, and 3 to 6 tablespoons of water. You mix that up until you got the consistency of a good dough. Then you got to knead it for 10 minutes, or about 10 minutes. Don't skip this part. Then you got to let it rest for about 20 minutes. Then roll it out to the desired thickness and shape that you want to do it, you know, that you want your pasta to be. You drop it in the boiling water, in the salted boiling water, I should say. And it doesn't take long. It only takes 3 or 4 minutes for that pasta to cook up quick. When it starts floating to the top, you usually know it's done. But anyway, give it a try. It's real easy to do, and it tastes good. The Gut Report was brought to you by Discount Liquor, where you'll find the best price, selection, and service at 51st and Oklahoma in Milwaukee and Main Street in Barstow in Waukesha. For weekly specials, go to DiscountLiquorInc.com.
Welcome back to Wacky Walleye's Cutting Edge Outdoors. We want to thank all the law enforcement officers out there doing their job protecting us, first responders, healthcare workers, military, and thank all our listeners listening to us religiously every Saturday morning, Tom.
Yeah, there's a lot of people out there who are they're on the job and they're listening to us, you know. A lot of people at fire departments, you know, because, you know, they have to be, you know, on the ready, you know, they got to be ready at a drop of a hat to take off.
Well, right now, Tom, there's somebody doing brain surgery listening to our show right at this moment.
Well, I don't know about
that. He's saying, pass me the forceps, Nurse Ratchet. And, probably not. And on a more serious note, Tom, did you lose a chicken by any chance?
Did I lose a chicken?
Yeah. Are you missing a chicken?
No, why?
Oh, okay, well, I just thought I'd check. I got an email from, it's kind of like a neighborhood Facebook group. I joined Next Door Pewaukee. I don't know, some chick talked me into signing up for this. And, you know, people will post, you know, information all the time. Some of it's kind of like, does anybody know how to make their own pasta? Well, they should have listened to your show. So they got, but, and then they'll send pictures of coyotes in their backyard. Well, here's a picture of a chicken. And if somebody says, are you missing a chicken? There's a chicken walking around on Emsley between University and Patrick Drives, I'm guessing. But, you know, with those coyotes around here, I would think that chicken's life, I would say his fortunes aren't looking too good, actually, because they've been spotting a lot of predators on the prowl lately.
Yeah, that chicken won't last long. And, especially out in the Pewaukee area, a lot of coyotes out there.
There's coyotes. I talked to a gal this week, and she had a friend who had some chickens, and a pair of fox got half her chickens. And I think they managed to shoot one of the fox. Of course, fox season is actually closed in February. I believe it goes to like February 15th. But I'm guessing if you have a fox that's in the process of killing your chickens, it's probably okay, I guess. I don't know to...
I think to shoot that fox? Yep, I think definitely it's okay. Yeah.
Now, if the fox was going after the poodle, I'd be cheering for the fox, but oh, I don't want to get myself in trouble with all the small dog lovers out there, but
that's right. Folks, send your emails to Danny Bush. You know,
why is it? What is it?
If you got any poodles?
What is it about those small dogs that their short-term memory or long-term memory is like missing? Because the same dog that you know that barks and wants to bite your ankles the first time, you could be there 100 days in a row, and the 100th day it'll still bark and want to bite your ankles. What's wrong with those dogs? Why can't they lose? I thought they were supposed to be intelligent.
Yeah, I got a neighbor who's got a dog, a big dog, and every time that dog sees me, you know, it starts barking like crazy. I don't know if it wants to kill me or something, you know. And thank goodness it's on a leash and that. But it's like, yeah, the dog's seen me for the last, I don't know, 3-4 years, whatever it's been. He should know by now I'm not a threat, you know. But nope, he thinks that I'm a threat to him or something. I don't know.
What's even more futile is when you hear the owner yelling, "Stop! No bark! Stop barking! Stop!" And the dog just barks more.
Oh, I know.
Them even trying to tell the dog is useless. You're peeing in the wind, my friend. That stupid dog isn't going to listen to you telling it to be quiet.
I know. There's times when my neighbor and I will be talking, and his dog will start barking like crazy, and he'll keep telling it to shut up, and it won't stop. And we can't hear each other while we're talking, so he's got to take it in his house. He's got to put it in the house so him and I can have a conversation. Yeah, it's weird. Yeah, well, what are you going to do?
What are you going to do? Also, along the line of emails, I did get an email from our friend Randy, who is kind of like our historian. He's kind of like our investigative professor on the show now, where anytime we talk about a subject, he researches it. And apparently we were talking about the tapeworms in fish. And evidently you were talking about the black specks on the fish and the parasites. Well, evidently those black specks, you were correct, is the larva stage of a flatworm. But that is not the broadfish tapeworm that we were talking about.
Oh, okay.
The broadfish tapeworm, you'd never even see it on a fish. Evidently, it's something that can be in the muscle of a fish. And that's why you'd want to make sure you cook it thoroughly. And as far as those black specks, you and I had both been told that, as long as you cook the fish thoroughly, that it's okay. And you kind of mentioned, well, if you see one with all those specks, you just toss it. You don't bother with it.
Yeah.
But he did some research, and he said that it's important to note that there's no evidence in the U.S. of either cooked or uncooked transmission to humans with the black speck cyst.
Oh.
So there's, even though they recommend, there's no record, I guess, evidence of it actually doing anything to anybody. But I guess I still would want to make sure I cook my fish thoroughly regardless.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to be the first one. I wouldn't want to be the guinea pig, and be testing it.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
I wouldn't be making any sushi out of it, that's for sure.
And as far as fish, I'll tell you what. Right now, the thought of getting some perch is pretty. That's got me kind of motivated. I went all the way to North Dakota, and we got some small perch, but none of those jumbos. But the fact that you can go onto the Mississippi River right now and get on those floats and get yourself some jumbo perch. Like I said, they had a good opening yesterday on reports from Clements, where my nephews went, and then I did talk to the owners of the Great Alma Float, which is a little further north. I think the Alma Float is north of La Crosse, Genoa one is south of La Crosse. They're in pretty much the same neck of the woods, but they catch all different species, and from what I understand, it's relatively easy. You can just fish with a minnow or whatever on the bottom, and it doesn't take a lot of great skill necessarily trying to jig perch necessarily. So I'm looking forward to that 7 o'clock report as well. And it's kind of funny though, we talk about perch. When my dad moved down to Marinette from living up by Duluth Superior area, all he ever heard from Minnesota anglers were wormy perch, wormy perch. They didn't like wormy perch. But then he got down to the Bay of Green Bay, and they treat perch like they're swimming gold.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, I remember as a, when you talk to people about fishing years ago in certain areas for certain species, sometimes it gets to be a little exaggerated. Now, I've heard people talk about the perch fishing off the what we used to call years ago the government pier, which is basically the McKinley Pier and the Breakwall. And I did that years ago, lots of it. And your average perch was 8-9 inches. Every now and then you get a 10-incher, but your average was running around 8-9 inches. And there were a lot of smaller ones, too. But sometimes you hear people talking about, oh, yeah, years ago from the break from the break wall, we'd catch, 10, 12, 14 inchers. We did that a lot, and I never saw one. I never saw a 12 incher ever. You know, like I said, they were mostly 8, 9 inchers, which were decent, and they were fat, and every now and then a 10 incher. But from what they're catching on the Mississippi, man, that would put those Lake Michigan ones from years ago to shame,
Well, I did hear the same reports from a friend of mine who grew up in Kenosha, and he used to go with his grandfather out on the pier in Kenosha, and you kind of got the same story about all the perch that they'd catch.
Oh, yeah, we caught so many. And to tell you the truth, back then, I don't even know if there was a bag limit. I don't know if there was. I mean, we would actually take a gunny sack and start throwing them in a gunny sack that was tied. It was my brothers tied it up. I was younger than when they tied that up. But, yeah, we'd come home with a lot of them. And it took quite a while to clean all those darn things, so...
Well, that's the thing.
That's the drawback.
That's the drawback. It's all great when you're getting all these perch. Now, from what I understand, the on that Mississippi River, they I think it's a 15 fish per person bag limit. So my brother-in-law then got 45 fish yesterday, but when they're good size, then, it's worth it. Now, my brother told me years ago when he came home with some bunch of perch, I think he told me that he had, 20, maybe he cleaned 20-some perch. And he got 17 pounds worth of fillets out of those perch. So those were a big average size perch.
Oh, I'll say. Wow. Yes, definitely.
Yeah, perch and walleye, comparing the two, what do you think's better, Tom?
Perch. Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Okay.
Definitely.
They just have a little more flavor, do you think?
I don't know. I really don't know for sure. I just like those a lot. Like them a lot. So, but I'll tell you what, Danny, you got your Hornswoggle stuff ready?
It's ready to go.
All right, because coming up next, folks, after this break, is the Hornswoggle, where you can win a $10 gift certificate to Carl's Country Market, and they're located in Menominee Falls on the corners of Silver Spring and Pilgrim Road. So call right now, 414-799-1250. If you've been a contestant, if you've won, let's put it that way, if you've won in the last 2 months or so, give somebody else a chance. Sam is keeping track, so... Don't be mad if you won like 3-4 weeks ago and Sam says you can't play. Don't be mad. We're warning you ahead of time. Anyway, call that number, 414-799-1250. Play the Hornswoggle right now.
Welcome back to Wacky Walleyes, Cutting Edge Outdoors. I'm Dan Bush, along with Tom Neubauer. Thanks for getting aboard the crazy train today, my friends. And I do want to thank our listeners. Tom, every once in a while I get, emails from our listeners. I get stuff left outside by my boat from our listeners, sometimes of the liquid alcoholic variety, and it's all much appreciated. All of our friends out there listening, we really enjoy it, and we're glad you enjoy the show too. And right now we do have our world famous Hornswoggle segment. Do we have a lucky contestant, Sam?
Yep, today we got Nick in Pewaukee, I should say.
Okay, we got Nick in Pewaukee. Morning, Nick.
Yeah, good morning, Nick.
Yep, so I see you got your pier in on the lake, huh?
Yeah, we might be a little premature, but it's it.
Yeah. At least you won't have any kind of iceberg come floating in and wreck it or anything. So I think you're okay. Hey, you might want to put some lights on the end of it, because it's just a matter of time before some lunkhead guy who wants to be the first water skier on the lake wants to go put his wetsuit on and, oh, look at us, we're water skiing. It's March. Look at me. And next thing you know,
he
hits your
pier. They used to do that every day.
What's that?
They really actually used to do that all the time.
Yeah. I'd rather be in the boat fishing bundled up than water skiing. So here we go. We were talking a little bit about hybrids before. So first one, the smallmouth bass and largemouth bass, it's rare, but they can cross, and it's called a meanmouth bass. Hornswoggle or no Hornswoggle?
No Hornswoggle.
No Hornswoggle. See, it pays to listen to the early part of the show. Okay, next one. Northern pike and walleye can cross, and they sell it in the stores as walleyed pike. Hornswoggle or no Hornswoggle?
Hornswoggle.
Hornswoggle.
Oh, thank you for getting that one right.
Yeah. And Tom, I don't know why they call them walleyed pike. You've seen that before, right, Tom?
Oh, yeah. I pointed out to, in the meat market, and they got these fillets and it says walleyed pike. And I'll ask the butcher, I'll say, well, what is it, a walleye or a pike? And they look at me and I say, well, because there is no such thing as a walleyed pike. Then they get mad at me. Well, my wife gets mad at me for starting trouble, but I'm just...
Then the butcher goes out back and spits on your walleyed pike as he wraps it up and says, take that, you son of a gun.
I'm helpful, I'm a nice guy.
Well, yeah, helpful. Well, didn't you used to terrorize waitresses with the same type of thing when you... Yep.
Would ask them too. Yep.
You just had to be that guy. Right? Okay, well, Nick, never mention walleye and pike in the same breath to Tommy the True, going to set you straight, Neubauer. And let's see if you get the last one. The cross between the muskie and the pike is called the tiger muskie. Hornswoggle or no Hornswoggle?
No Hornswoggle.
No Hornswoggle. All right, Nick. Well, that sounds good. And look forward to seeing you out on the lake this year soon. And, have you done any brown trout fishing this year? Did you get to Lake Michigan?
No, I've been traveling too much for work. I really haven't had a chance. But I know guys that have gone down there and caught a few.
Out by Bender?
Yeah.
I think what's that?
Apparently, they're switching the power plant over, so that's going to be no longer.
Oh, really? So it'll be shut down for a while?
I'm not sure. Yeah.
Oh, that's a bummer.
I'm not sure when, but it's going to be somewhat soon, I guess.
Oh, well, that.
Why are they shutting down the power plant? Are they going to put up solar panels or some wind farms down there?
Well, because it's nuclear, and they're nuclear power plants all over. So I don't know if they're switching to coal or gas or what it is, but...
Really? They're getting rid of the nuclear plant? Wow.
Yeah.
What are they afraid of? Three Mile Island again?
I don't know. But it's kind of a shame because that's a great fishery.
Yeah.
Well,
it is.
If when they switch over, Nick, are they still going to have a warm water discharge, or is that all done?
No, because that's specifically from nuclear power.
Right. That's where they need it. Yeah.
So, I mean, they've been shutting it down. I don't know if you saw, but they used to have four chutes or three chutes on the north side, and one on the south,
right?
Or vice versa, and they only have like one chute open now on the south. And then the one on the north. So they're gradually shutting it down.
I guess the more reason to fish either the Boyles or go to McKinley, I guess, and fish in the harbor there.
Or get a big net.
Yeah.
That too.
Well, thanks, Nick. Leave your address with Sam. I'll get that sent to you, buddy.
All right. See you guys. Have a good day.
All right. Take care.
Hey, Danny. I got a friend who's got one of these old volleyball nets. I mean, we could drop that down with some weights, and we can pull that along the back of your boat, or we'll bet you we get some trout and salmon in that.
We can dredge some
up. Yeah, we'll drag a net like they do, out in the oceans.
Well, here's the thing. If you want to get some brown trout, it can be hit or miss if you go into the harbor there by McKinley. But there's several ways of getting them. Now, there is a sanitation station, and I believe they've got a discharge there. And I saw a YouTube video of some guys fishing in front of that, and they were throwing jerk baits. It looked like they had the Mega Bass Vision 110, same one we use for the smallies up in the Bay of Green Bay. And they were slamming a bunch of browns. Now, other guys like to jig there. Some guides and so forth like to sometimes go right in those spots and jig. And I'm not really much into the jigging. I can see how casting with those jerk baits, if the browns are slamming those. In fact, after I saw that, if I ever get to Kenosha and fish off the pier there for the browns in the middle of summer, I'm going to add jerk baits to my arsenal because I think that could be a killer tactic. But if you want to try and troll for them, I've done real well with Junior Thundersticks, the deep diving ones. You troll them behind planer boards with maybe 10-pound mono, and you got to figure out where in the water column the fish are. Sometimes they're up high, sometimes a little lower. So you're going to let out anywhere between 10 to 50 feet of water. 50 feet of water, 50 feet of line, and then put your board on. And so typically, once you get a fish, say, with 30 feet of line out, well, then you typically try and match and move all your other ones to that. And I've had times where I could go catch my browns there, limited browns there, or if you go out right in past the break walls there, off the main and south gap, particularly I've done well off that south gap in about 35, 40 feet of water. Then if you go with your dipsy divers and downriggers, just running spoons 25 or 30 feet deep, you could get the Lakers. And I've had times where it was nonstop. Again, it's hit or miss. Now, last year I went one day. We got one nice 17-pound Laker right in the south gap. But that was like the only fish of the day. But do be aware, they did change those regulations, I believe, on the Lakers, where I think you can only keep two now. Again, double-check it. Yeah, they had opened it up where you could keep five, just like you could keep five brown trout. Now I think it's just two, so if a one-man limit, you could probably get two Lakers and three browns, and you'd have your five-fish limit. But again, don't take my word for it. Definitely check your up-to-date regs. Go online, check it out before you go out there.
Did you say that was what discharge area?
There's the sanitation.
Sanitation. Like, now, isn't that where they discharge all the poop in at Lake Michigan?
No. I don't think so. I don't think that's it. I don't know.
You sure?
Yeah. Okay. You know, the only listen, Tom. The only do that those dumps is if the big tunnel system floods and we get too much rain.
Okay.
Otherwise, they don't discharge anything into Lake Michigan.
Good.
Yeah.
Well,
but
right now, we gotta go to the top of the hour break.
And we got 2 minutes yet.
We got a couple of commercials we gotta play.
Okay. One important thing though, if they ever do a discharge in heavy rain, if that water's murky in the harbor, forget about it.
There you go. Forget about it.
You're not gonna catch nothing.
Right.
Nothing. Right. A whole
now,
lot of nothing.
We got a special guest coming up after the 7 o'clock break, folks. So. Stay tuned for that, talking about Mississippi perch or Mississippi barges. So stay tuned for that and a whole lot more right here in the Wacky Walleye's Cutting Edge Outdoors.
The following is paid commercial programming, and opinions expressed do not necessarily reflect those of WSSP, Entercom Milwaukee, its staff, or sponsors.
From Lake Michigan to the Mississippi, and every river, lake, and field in between. Let's talk everything outdoors.
All aboard! Ha, ha, ha! You're on the crazy train!
All aboard!
Welcome to the Wacky Walleye Cutting Edge Outdoors Show. Fasten your seatbelts for a wild ride through Wisconsin's outdoors. Only on 1250 AM, The Fan.
Thank you for staying tuned to the second hour of the Wacky Walleye's Cutting Edge Outdoors. You can always be a part of the show by calling us at 414-799-1250. That's 414-799-1250. Or you can email us live at ceoguys@yahoo.com. We come to you every Saturday morning from 6 to 8 a.m., so strap up. You know, your seat belts here on the crazy train, because we got a great guest coming up. Danny, who's our guest coming up?
Right now, we have Mr. Jim Lodermeyer. I hope I pronounced your name correct there. Jim, from the Great Alma Fishing Float. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Jim.
So, hey, Jim, yeah, good talking. Thanks for taking the time to call. Now, you and your brother, you guys operate that float. Is that correct?
Yep, that's correct. Yeah, we've owned it for 34 years. So
holy cow, that's a long time. Now, and yesterday now, you guys kicked off your season yesterday, March 19th. And tell us a little bit about, you know, what's happening on the float right now.
Well, we had beautiful weather. We had a pretty nice crowd out here. So we're right below the Lock and Dam, and so it's pretty ideal fishing area. Got a pretty good number of big perch and walleyes yesterday. We got a nice crew started here today. The sun's almost coming up here, so yeah.
So let me
start.
Go ahead, Tom.
I got a quick question. About how many people do you get on your float usually?
Well, on a busy day, it's, you know, we can get 60 or 70 or maybe even more than that. Normally, it's, you know, a pretty normal day is 30 or 40.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how much do you charge for somebody to come on your float?
What's that?
How much do you charge?
We charge $23 for adults, $9 for kids 12 and under.
Oh, that's not bad at all.
No, no.
Do you have bait there as well? Do you sell live bait?
Yep. Yeah, we have live bait, minnows, crawlers, suckers. So, yeah, usually. And we got a little tackle shop, too, so kind of the basic stuff that people fish on the river with. So,
okay. So, now, do you walk out onto your barge, or do you have to ferry people out?
We have a ferry boat. It's 18 passengers. So, yeah, we pick people up at 7 in the morning and run them out till, if they want to stay till 6 in the evening, or they can come and go as they please.
All righty. Yeah.
Now, on your float, can you go inside to warm up if it's cold? Have you got bathroom, food? What do you got on the float?
Yeah, we have a little shack, a little warming building. We got frozen pizzas we can make up and some sandwiches and popping candy, coffee, that kind of thing. And then we have restrooms out here. There's benches to sit on. We usually have plenty of landing nets out there for people. They don't have to drag a whole lot out there. We even have buckets for minnows if they don't want to take all that stuff with them and come out. You can rent poles even if you want to. Most people don't, but some do.
So what would a guy come there with as far as tackle? Let's say one of our listeners in Milwaukee says to his wife or buddy, and hey, let's drive up and go fish on the float on Sunday. Just a couple of medium spinning rods, any particular gear, hooks, tackle, rigs that they need?
Pretty simple stuff. Yep. I like to go with medium 6 pound, 8 pound test in most cases, unless you're fishing for like catfish or sturgeon or northern, you got to go a little heavier, but this time of year, it's a lot of walleyes and perch and that. Yeah, pretty light stuff. There's current out here, so you need ounce to ounce and a half to 2 ounce even sinkers if you're going to go with a live bait setup like a river rig or a slip sinker like a Lindy type setup. If you're going to use a jig, a hair jig, or a plain jig and a minnow, 5/8 to 3/4 out in the fast water, in the deeper water, and then we have shallower, calmer water. You can get by with a lot lighter stuff.
Yeah,
so,
and you had mentioned.
You want to fish for too.
Yeah, you had mentioned yesterday the perch that you could kind of chuck your line out and walk away and just come back and you might have a perch on. Are you just fishing on bottom then with minnows and some split shot or a slip sinker or something like that?
Yep, that's exactly what we're doing. We were working out here last week. We weren't open yet, and we were just throwing a line over the edge and keeping an eye on it. And, yeah, you'd see it bouncing, and you'd go over there and pull one in. Either a small part of a crawler or a minnow and just land it on the bottom. That's usually pretty simple setup, just hook and sinker.
It really doesn't have to be that fancy then. It sounds like it's kind of a no-brainer when they're in there and hitting.
It is. It's and that's pretty typical most of the summer. There's a lot of people that like to bring all their new gadgets out and try them, and it seems like most of the time you just end up going to the hook and sinker type setup if you're using live bait.
Gotcha. And then now they're getting perch and walleyes now. Is there a seasonal pattern where you get, maybe you're getting perch now, but you'll get pike later? I mean, is there any rhyme or reason to it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, as the water warms up here now in April, we'll start seeing more northerns, bass, smallmouth and largemouth will start showing up, catfish and the panfish, like bluegills and crappies, and the perch usually kind of hang around sometimes through the summer too, but then that's a little bit more of a summer bite. You still get some saugers and walleyes, but they phase out a little bit in the warmer months sometimes. Not always, but once in a while. It's always different. You never know what you're going to catch.
Then as far as if a guy wanted to target pike, would you just throw a big shiner under a bobber or a dead smelt or something?
Yep, we have sucker minnows or shiners, or just put it on. A lot of times we'll put it on a river rig or a slip sinker the same way and let it either sit just off the bottom, off the railing, or bobbers are a little tougher out here because of the current sometimes, but in the summertime it's pretty easy to use them.
Gotcha. Now,
go ahead.
Now, if a person went up there, and let's say they wanted to fish for a couple of days, do you get people like just staying in a little motel close by, and is there a fish cleaning facility somewhere where a guy could clean his fish, put it on ice for a day, and come back, catch more the next day?
Yeah, the motel. Most of the motels have a fish cleaning station. Now, we do have some night fishing out here. We have some bunk rooms. A lot of people have a good time coming out here. There's room for 12 people. There's three bunks with four beds in a bunk, and that's a reservation thing. They do tend to get filled up, especially in the spring here. But that's a lot of fun too, because then you kind of have the whole place to yourself with your group. So.
Oh, that's cool. I imagine they're fishing catfish and walleyes then at night. Yeah. I'm guessing.
Yep.
Now, there's Jim, like for an example, I don't know how to get to your place. Is there a website where you got directions on how to find your place?
Yep. So ElmaFishingFloat.com is our website. Also, Facebook, we post a lot of reports, daily reports. We try to do it daily on our Facebook site, and that's pretty simple and easy to everybody to check out, and just usually throw pictures on there and tell you what's biting and how they're getting them. So.
Yeah.
Another question, Jim, is it probably, I'm just thinking, best like for a retired guy like me, come during the weekdays as opposed to the weekend? Is it going to be a little less busy?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Friday, Saturday is always our busy days, sometimes Sunday even, but springtime, it's all about the weather too. It makes a difference.
Well, that brought my next question. I talked to my brother, and he kind of was thinking that if you have heavy rain for a couple of days, then you might get cloudy, murky water, a lot of stuff, junk floating in the water, then fishing might be tougher. Is that the case?
Yeah, it can. What's the biggest change that we get when the fish change their bite pattern is the gates on the dam, because we're real close to the lock and dam below it. And when they start changing gates at a regular basis, you know, from heavy rains or snow melt, that changes fishing it can daily. Right now it's kind of stable, so nothing's really changing real fast, but you know, get a 2 or 3 days of rain, and sometimes the murky water even makes it better because they don't spook so easy.
Gotcha. Well, it sounds like you got a great setup. You had a great start to the year yesterday, and how long will you be open till into the fall, I'm guessing?
Yep, we first of November we close, so yep.
Okay.
Well, we're open 7 days a week, so.
We appreciate you taking the time to call, and hopefully while we've been talking, you're watching people pull in some big fish, and I hope some of our listeners can get up there and have a good time on the float this year.
Absolutely, yeah. They can sure give me a call and find out more info if they want to, information.
All right. Well, thanks, Jim. We appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thanks for letting me be on. This is a lot of fun.
All right. Well, hopefully we'll see you soon.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Bye now. Yep. Well, Danny, I guess you and I might have to make a road trip.
You know, I'm thinking now, I was talking to my buddy Arizona Joe about this, about me and him going, and then that bonehead had to go home and tell his girlfriend. So now his girlfriend wants to go with him. So now he's saying, hey, maybe I got to find a girl to take up there. Well, you know, I don't know what to do now. I maybe it is just me and you, or maybe me and Al Shook will have to take another road trip. We went a heck of a lot further to catch those North Dakota perch. If we can drive up to Alma, I'm thinking it's about a 3.5-hour drive, and we can be on the float chilling out.
Yeah. That sounds interesting. I know some people have said, well, it can get busy. Well, that would be on the weekend, you know.
Right.
You know, if you got 60, 70 people on it. But if there's only about 30 people or so, that doesn't sound too bad.
Well, I'll tell you what. When I got the pictures of my nephews catching the perch, and they were, you know, down south on the Mississippi on Clements Barge, and it's similar type setup. One of the perch in the picture, you can see it's got that bait totally inhaled down its throat, it looks like. It sounds like it's, you don't have to be Joe Expert Finesse Fisherman
right,
to try right. and finesse those things. Like when I was fishing ice fishing, I mean, I was using the little spoons and the wax worms, and you're jigging it, and you're watching your, you know, Vexlar, and it was all finesse. This sounds like chuck that son of a gun out on the bottom and wait for a perch to suck it up. So yeah. It doesn't look like it's that hard, like you need a lot of equipment. So grab your spinning rod and drive on up there with some sinkers and hooks in your box and get bait there, and you're good to go. So I just might have to make a drive up there this week, Tom.
Yeah, I was surprised at the weight, a half to three-quarter ounce. That's, you know, that would be like for the jigs or the sinkers, but he said you can also use the Lindy rigs. But, boy, that, you know, three-quarters ounce, you know, that must have a little bit of current there to have to use that, you know.
Yeah, and I think that's it. When we come back after our break, Tom, I want to ask you some questions about that.
All right, well, let's go to a break, and we'll do that. Folks, stay tuned. He's Dan Bush. I'm Tom Neubauer. Say hi to Sam Schmitz when you give him a call at 799-1250. We'll be right back with more.
Welcome back to the Wacky Walleyes, Cutting Edge Outdoors. Thanks for getting aboard the crazy train this morning. We got another 45 minutes of scintillating fishing and hunting talk, or at least we hope it is. And Tom, we were talking a little bit about fishing off the barge, and he mentioned Wolf River rigs, slip sinkers, Lindy rig. If you're going to use, like, would you say a half-ounce slip sinker, would you use like maybe an 18-inch leader line, and then have that with a swivel on it, and then have the slip sinker, like the Lindy slip sinker, just above that swivel? Is that how you would set up?
No, just below the swivel.
Just below the swivel?
Yeah. Yeah, and
okay.
I would use the Lindy walking sinker. Have you ever seen those?
Yeah, that's
yeah.
the kind I have. They
yeah.
send them. Okay, so you would actually have that sinker.
Well, yeah,
below.
Because the swivel... is the line is the your 18-inch leader line has got to go through the sinker, and it's got to stop when it hits the swivel. You know what I'm saying?
Well, if it's below the swivel, wouldn't your sinker just go right down to by the hook and get things screwed up?
No, the line goes through the sinker, and then it stops when it hits the swivel. You know, when the swivel hits the sinker, that's
yep.
when the line stops going
okay.
through.
So, but when you wind it in, the sinker is going to be right on top of the hook.
Yes.
Okay.
That'll
but
happen.
Then when you chuck it out, then the line's going to go on through. If there's a current, it's going to go through.
Right. It'll
and,
go through. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
You know, I'll tell you what, there's a number of ways to rig it. Actually, a Wolf River rig is even easier.
Well, that's a three.
Easier. You've got a three-way swivel.
Right.
You have a sinker hanging from the bottom of the three-way. You got your line going to the other three-way, and on the other three-way, you got your leader line. That's actually, the Wolf River rig would be a lot easier. A lot easier. Yeah.
So that Wolf River rig would be a pretty darn good Mississippi River rig as well.
Yes, definitely.
And I think we have a caller right now, Tom.
Yeah, I think I might have been thinking about the swivel and the line and the walking. I might have been backwards on that. But anyway, who do we got?
Let's go to Frank in Bayview.
All right. Hey, Frank, how's it going?
Morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Good. What's
doing
on your
good.
Mind?
Well, I've fished several of the barges
yeah.
a number of years ago, and the current is a big, big factor.
I mean, well, I can imagine. It sounds like it.
You have to love fishing in the current. I don't.
I don't either.
It is a battle. It is nothing but work. And you have to fish stuff that's so heavy, you almost lose contact.
Uh-huh.
And I'll tell you about the current. There are certain places on the barge that catch more fish. And everybody,
you know, see, that's what I was thinking about. I mean, if you get yeah. there early, if you've been there before, you know where the good spots are, you know.
Yeah. And it kind of changes with the current or how clean the water is.
Mm-hmm.
The best example is I used to fish the Wolf and the Fox a lot and fish Eureka. Well, what happens at Eureka? A guy catches a walleye and all the boats move toward that boat.
Yeah.
Right.
It pretty much happens on the barge. You see these guys start to push toward you. You catching fish, they're all over there. So it can be, you know, if there's a lot of people, it's not much fun. That's my experience. And we put that together with the current.
Did you ever see lines getting tangled?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. I can imagine.
You got people that don't have a clue. You know, and you have to put up with that. So if that's what you like to do, nah, not me.
You know,
yeah,
you bring up a good point. Yeah.
I guess it's like anything. You know, I used to experience that fishing on the Lake Michigan piers, where one guy catches a fish, and next thing you know, everybody's getting closer and closer.
Yeah.
I guess if I were to do the barge, I would try doing it during a weekday when there's not as many guys. And I probably would try and find a place on the barge where there's a little more slack, where the current isn't as bad. I'm guessing there's spots where you might have the current just a little bit less than other areas.
Yes, and those are the most popular spots.
Okay.
And you just get that accordion effect, you know. Yeah, the whole line starts to move.
Yeah, I suppose.
Shrink a little bit, so.
All right. Well, thanks for the report there.
All right. Yeah, have a good day,
Frank.
Guys.
Appreciate
Take
that.
Care.
That's good info. Thanks.
Yeah, I think it's like anything, Tom. You're never ever going to have Shangri-La where everything's, you know, perfect. But in the pictures that I got yesterday from, you know, from my brother-in-law up there with his kids, it didn't look like it was overly crowded, and they didn't look like they were having a problem finding a spot to catch the fish. You know, so yeah, like anything, you got to kind of do your homework, and I guess it doesn't, you know, once you get out there and you kind of learn, then it probably pays to get there early and get your best spot, just like anything, though.
I wonder if you could take a boat to this spot like that.
Well, You don't want to be a knob and pull up right next to him. That's
well, no,
kind of like
no, I'm not saying
that's kind of like pulling up next to the shore fishermen on a river and pissing them off, you know, where they're going to start casting over your boat.
No, I don't mean that, but I mean looking for like areas, you know.
Yeah, I imagine, I guess, once a guy did go and kind of learned what areas the barges are hitting, yeah, I'm sure you could try and find a place downriver or somewhere similar type thing. I mean, they're all not just in that part of the river, so sure.
Exactly.
If you do, although on a river, again, you're dealing with currents, and there can be, you know, rocks and obstructions, so you got to kind of, I'm guessing, kind of know what you're doing too.
Oh, exactly, especially if there's wing dams around. Yeah, you better know where you're going and, you know, yeah, Yeah, you better know.
And I can see a guy losing an anchor in a river. Mm-hmm. If you get that, you get some kind of, well, first of all, it's really hard to anchor in a river. And then once you do, I can see that you get that anchor cut. Didn't the guy go down years ago because he couldn't get his anchor up and they opened up a dam and the guy couldn't get the anchor rope cut or whatever? Seems to me I heard a story a couple of years ago.
Yeah, that might be. Yeah, it might be.
Yeah.
Yeah, because if they open up some of those gates, that can get pretty squirrely, you know?
Yeah, I imagine that would be a little difficult. Now, we've been talking the Mississippi River. Now's the time of year. The guys like to go up and do the fishing on the Wisconsin River as well, Tom. Now, I've never fished the Wisconsin. Have you fished the Wisconsin River?
Yeah, in some areas I have. I used to do a lot on the Rock River over by Fort Atkinson.
Okay.
But I just stopped doing that because of the fact that this time of year, once the ice leaves, yeah, there's a lot of walleyes here, most of them under the 15-inch size limit, but it's like the U.S. Navy 7th Fleet is in there. My goodness, are there the boats, and I just didn't want to deal with all the boats anymore, you know? It just was just too busy, and, you know, it'd be different if you were catching more legal walleyes, but so many of them were like that 12, 13, 14 inches, you know? So
they just weren't quite making it.
Yeah, you could get some, you know, you get some decent ones, you know, like one time I was up out there with one of my brother Larry, and he got, I can't remember if that fish was 26, 27, 28 inches, something like that. He got a big walleye, which, you know, he thought was a, you know, every time he had a stick or a rock or a clam on, he thought it was a fish. And one time he even caught a rod and reel one time, a nice one too. But no, you know, there are good fish there, but most of them are short, you know, most of them.
So now the Rock runs into Koshkonong, correct?
Yes.
Okay. How about, yeah, have you fished Koshkonong itself?
No. I mean, you're looking at a big body of water that's roughly 6 feet deep, the whole thing, right? And it's like those fish can be anywhere. There's no structure in that lake, you know. You don't have a weed line, inside weed line, outside weed line. You don't have a drop off, you know. You don't have a channels, current channels, and that. I mean, it's so hard to find the fish. If you don't fish it a lot, it's really hit and miss. For guys that guide out there, they've been out there for years. They know where to go, you know. But you see most guys fishing it, they're trolling, because,
well,
that's the only way to fish it, you know, to cover water, you know.
Our biologist Ben Heisner, one time when we had him on the show years ago, he came into the studio with us on a Saturday. When I contacted him on like the Friday, the day before, he was actually out on Koshkonong at that time trolling for walleyes. And in talking to him, I think he's done pretty good on there. So, you know, if the biologist is fishing somewhere, that probably tells you something.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. You got to cover water there. You know, you gotta troll. And there's going to be, and, you know, like I said, there's no really rhyme or reason, because there's no real structure on the lake, you know, defining structure, I should say. So you just got to start driving around, you know, and I would imagine some areas are better than others, but I'm talking big areas are better than others. I have never been on it. I never wanted to just do the hit and miss thing. I like fishing lakes that have some type of structure that I can, you know, go to. So anyway,
I think they don't, they troll and get catfish there as well, isn't it?
Yeah,
catfish.
Yeah, they,
okay,
got catfish, they got perch, they got crappie, they got walleye. And there's some bass in there too, you know. I mean, there's a number of different species.
I think they get some pike in the sloughs,
yeah,
in the spring.
Pike, and I think they get some big bluegills too. So,
okay.
I mean, there's a lot of fish there, but like I said, it's a big body of water, pretty shallow, and so, you know, you really got to cover some ground.
Yeah, I suppose, but if you troll it, you start to get some patterns. It's just time on the water,
oh, yeah,
like anything, that you,
yeah,
got to learn it. You got to take,
yeah,
the time. Otherwise, if I just go out there and go blind, I'm, I'm probably going to suck for the first couple times I go out there till I start to get a pattern down.
Yeah, or you just start following the guides, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Find out who they are, and then you follow them.
Bring the binoculars.
There
yeah,
you go.
Yeah, you be that guy that That's follows right. the guide.
That's right. Why not? You know, so hey, it's why it's free. You know, all fair.
I never want to be.
Fishing, you know,
I never want to be that guy. Although, you know, I bumped into a guy in the waterfront, another one of our fine sponsors out here, and in waterfront, and he told me, he says, yeah, he says, thanks to you, I got a muskie last year. I said, what? He says, yeah. He says, I know your boat. He says, I followed. I saw where you were. You left. I went and trolled through there and caught a muskie. So I'm like, son of a gun. I thought my boat was kind of like under the radar. It's not a big fancy. It's not like yeah. I'm driving a Formula One race car like some of these obnoxious boats people have.
Did you ask him for his name and address so you could send him a bill?
No, he just bought me a beer. It was all good.
All right. Well, listen, we got to go to another break quick, folks. Stay tuned for more. We got some other interesting stuff coming up. But if you want to get any questions or comments, 414-799-1250 is the phone number. Or you can email us live at ceoguys@yahoo.com. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Wacky Walleyes Cutting Edge Outdoors. Thanks for listening today, and hopefully we're getting some valuable fishing information out to you about catching those perch on the rivers. And, you know, in addition to the float in we talked about up in Alma, that's called the Great Alma Fishing Barge. You can just Google it. There's also one Clements. C-L-E-M-E-N-T-S. I believe that's a little bit further south of La Crosse. Our listener, Randy Reading, one of our good listeners and friends, he had sent me pictures of some big perch. Tommy sent me another picture of some giant perch in a big 5-gallon bucket. And apparently his friend was fishing on a barge down by the border by Iowa. So there's a number of different barges up and down the river from north to south. And I guess it would be a matter of trying to maybe drive to the one that's closest to you and spending some time and in learning it.
Yeah, Greg had sent us an email last week telling us that Clements Barge in Genoa, Wisconsin.
Yep.
Best damn fish float in La Crosse, Wisconsin. Then, of course, the Great Alma fish float, like you said. And then there's a Trempealeau fish float in Trempealeau, Wisconsin. So, yeah, there's a number of them up and down the river, you know.
Right.
And I bet you they're all doing good.
Yeah, I think this is the time. And as long as the weather stays stable, I think, you know, it's interesting. Stable weather patterns, I think, that's kind of a clue, I think, a lot of times for good fishing success, if you can get into that. Now, as far as the other fishing that's going to be going on, the big walleye fishing and the smallies going to be starting up in the Bay of Green Bay. I do know that people are already, of course, in the Fox River. Have you talked to anybody who's been up in the Fox? I mean, that talk about a zoo. That can be a zoo up there, too.
Oh, that is. Yeah, without a doubt. Yeah, no, I have not talked to anybody about that, but it's the same every year. It's the same every year. It is a zoo this time of year. But, you know, I'll tell you what, you can catch the fish of a lifetime right now up there. And the weird thing is that certain areas you go to, you know, I mean, my goodness, there's all kinds of fish in that river. I mean, there's muskies in there, northern pike, smallmouth bass, largemouth bass. White bass in there, big catfish. You know, they got all, you know, a couple different, they got a lot of flatheads up there. And there are channels, too. But, you know, sometimes when you're throwing a bait out there, you're not really sure what you might catch, you know, when something's tugging on the other end of the line. But you're right, Danny. It's a zoo, a lot of people, a lot of boats. You know, you gotta watch where you're going, you know. So.
Well, even the shore fishing up there years ago, I've had, you know, friends did it, and half the people were snagging the fish and half the people were actually catching them in the mouth, but it could be kind of crazy. And then I think they put a fishing pier there up there in Deep Pier, and that made it worse. whereas it used to be you had to at least have a pair of waders and put some effort to get out there. So I got one friend of mine, he won't even do that anymore. But here's the thing. There are spots to fish from shore where if a guy does his homework, you can get away and find spots and catch walleyes and fish that, you know, and nobody else is even there. I was talking to Tilkey, and right there at the mouth of the Fox is one of those sleeper spots right in front of his place. He said, hey, guys are casting, catching walleyes already here. There's spots like that. If you go in the Bay of Green Bay, now people like to do the fishing for the Bay of Green Bay walleye. 30 years ago or longer, there was a tight-lipped group of guys, old guys, that used to go on the end of the Menominee Pier on the Michigan side at the mouth of the Menominee River. And this was before this big whole walleye explosion is what it is today. But there were always walleyes in the Bay of Green Bay back then, and there were always guys that fished for them. Not like it is, you know, today, of course. But there was a tight-lipped bunch of old guys that would go in the spring, and they'd fish off the end of the pier, and casting, they'd throw Rapalas, and they'd put a keel weight up in front of a Rapala, and they'd go with the big Rapalas. I think the F-18 is the big size, or the, you know, the regular size. And the keel weight helped you launch a longer cast out there. And my dad was like the king on that. He'd always catch nice walleyes, and he had just a cheap Zebco 33, and he just wind real slow. Dad was not any type of guy that would impart action into his bait. He was just a chuck and wind it. And him with his lackadaisical chuck and wind method would catch walleyes, whereas my brother, trying to twitch his rod tip and be all fancy when he was returning at the Rapala, my brother wouldn't catch anything. But there were times when you'd see 7 and 8 pound walleyes flopping around the pier at midnight on the edge of that pier out in the dark, and nobody was in a boat fishing the Menominee River back then.
Wow. You know, you were right. I was thinking about it during the break. I don't know what I was thinking before. I think it's because I'm overtired or what, but you were right that walking slip sinker is before the barrel swivel.
Okay. Yeah, that's
right.
That's,
yeah, I don't know I'm half brain dead this morning, Danny.
Well, I'm sure some of our listeners were probably listening and screaming into their radio.
Yeah. Oh yeah, they were
Tom, Dan's right. What are you talking about?
Yeah. Oh yeah, they were. I know. Thank goodness I didn't get an email yet telling me that I'm a Nimrod or something. You know. So.
No.
Oh, and we did get an email.
Okay.
This week from Tex in the big rig, and he wanted to tell us that he keeps saying that he's going to go on one of those floats. He just hasn't done it yet, but he was going to send that last week, he said, but he got it a little too late. So I just thought I'd want to say thanks for Tex for listening to us and sending us that email. So.
Yeah, hopefully we get a report on Winnebago from Tex at some point. I imagine he'll be getting out there and do some open water fishing. Now, wasn't it Tex that called us a couple of years ago, Tom? And he talked about some bay up there by Lake Winnebago near a bait shop that they were getting a bunch of big bluegills in the spring.
Was it Tex?
I thought it was Tex that was talking to us about that.
Yeah, because there's like a bait shop and you can fish from shore, right?
Yeah, seems to me, I'd heard something about that. But I was talking about shore spots, you know, not only the end of that pier by the Menominee. The Sturgeon Bay Ship Canal, there's guys you can cast and catch walleyes at night right there. There's several spots that you can go and just cast, and I mean, in big walleyes. I mean, you're catching high 20-inchers, and you got the possibility of a 30-incher. And then there's some other piers. Now, Paul Smith, years ago, he did a newspaper article, I believe, in the Journal Sentinel, where he went with somebody. I think it was a guy from Pewaukee. I don't know if they said the name. And he did a story, and they were catching some big walleyes at night off a pier somewhere in the Sturgeon Bay area. And I got a pretty good idea where. I just ain't going to say it on the air right now, Tom.
Oh,
I'm
hell
gonna
no.
Have to
don't say it.
That.
No, you can't do that.
No, no. You got to keep some. But there are, if you put in your homework, there are some spots to go. I'm tempted to get some waders. I do not own a pair of waders. Let me ask you this, Tom. If you were to get waders primarily for spring and fall, you want to get insulated ones, don't you?
I suppose that would be the best route. But, you know, the thing is you can wear something underneath it, like sweatpants, you know, or regular jeans, you know. You can have something on, you know, on.
Right.
But
right.
I mean, you know, insulated would be nice, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, especially when the water's cold.
And I am tempted to get a pair of waders. Now, I know Hodgman is a good brand. I believe I was at a Dunham's this fall, and they had some sale on some waders. But the thing is, it seems like waders are one of those things, Tom, where you probably get what you pay for. I mean, there's such a wide range in prices. And then some guys like the neoprene ones, and then they got, the stocking foot ones where you got to put, you know, wear boots with them over them. And
yeah.
I'm just trying to debate what would be a good type to get. And then they'd have certain ones, you know, with so many grams of Thinsulate or whatever. I'm just trying to debate. I don't want to get the most expensive ones, but I don't want to get the cheapest ones either. I want to get something that's decent and, most important, Tom, not going to leak, because my dad never owned a pair of waders that didn't leak.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I
remember years ago he'd get those rubber patch kits, you know,
yeah,
and he'd be putting patches all over his waders, and he'd be out smelt fishing with his counselor buddy up in the Bay of Green Bay in the spring, and all of a sudden he'd start complaining he was feeling water again. So even his patch attempts always failed.
I got your email from Randy Reading. Did you send that to me?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, and it shows the bucket with some nice perch in it. Yeah, those are nice.
Those are some big ones, man.
Yeah, those are good. They got the deep bellies on them and that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Those. If you could get a bucket, a big perch like that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, those are some dandies.
Yeah, because, you know, you try to buy perch fillets in a store, they're not cheap, you know?
No, and in fact, I did hear that the price has gone up. I think it was perch that I was reading about, that the price has gone up. Therefore, you're going to have the price in the restaurants is going to go up as well. In fact, didn't you say that a lot of these restaurants are going with ocean perch instead of the yellow perch because they can't get the yellow perch?
Well, no. I don't know if they go with the ocean perch, but I know it's a lot of haddock and cod, you know, stuff like that, you know. That kind of stuff that they go with. As a matter of fact, to tell you the truth, I prefer, if they got cod, I'd rather have the cod than the regular perch from around here, because they, number one, they always have the skin on it, and I don't care for the skin. And number two, I guarantee you, you're going to find some little bones in them. Guaranteed, without a doubt. They don't take the time like we do to cut out that little V-strip of bones, you know. Yeah, they don't take the time for that. So
you prefer perch if it's just ones that you've cleaned yourself?
Yeah, exactly. If I clean it myself, exactly. Perch,
gotcha.
Bluegill, those are great. You know, it's hard to get a bad one of those. I don't think I've ever had a bad perch or bluegill. Never.
When we come back from break, remind me, I got to ask you something more on cooking perch and bluegill.
All right. Well, then we'll be right back with more of the cutting edge of the Wacky Walleyes Cutting Edge Outdoors, right here on Sports Radio 1250 AM, The Fan.
It's the final countdown. The final countdown.
Welcome back for the final exciting, scintillating segment of the Wacky Walleyes Cutting Edge Outdoors. And right now, Tom, I'm going to hold my questions on cooking bluegills and perch for a little bit, because we got a couple callers on the line. First up, we got our friend on Fish Addiction Charters, Mr. Sean Gillis.
Good morning,
Sean. How you doing, guys?
Doing good, man. What's up?
Hey, I was just getting the call because we're on the way down to the boat, going to polish it up, get it ready for dropping in this spring, and get ready to go catch some cohos and salmon.
So, is it going to get, I mean, is it season just going to start now? Is it pretty much going to be game on once you get your boat on the water out there?
Yeah, we go in about, I think, April 17th. We'll be fishing out of Racine until June 1st. And then from June 1st to the rest of the season, we'll be out of Milwaukee.
And it's primarily cohos and browns early, and then it transitions to the kings in, what, midsummer?
Yeah, you still catch some kings, lake trout, and rainbows early as well. It's kind of a mixed bag, but mainly focused on cohos early in the season.
And you had a fantastic year last year. I know you caught a lot of fish. What's it looking like? Because I know every year you hear the story changes on Lake Michigan. Oh, there's too many alewives. There's not enough alewives. Oh, the fish are big, but there's not a lot. Or there's a lot of them, but they're small. What's going on out there?
We're kind of in a unique spot. They're deciding to stock more salmon in the next few years. But what they have done previous years is they had a lot of other states stocking more coho. So this coho season should be really spectacular.
Okay. So man, large number of cohos.
That most people want, too.
Yeah, those are some of the best-eating fish in the lake.
Yep.
And there were some 30-pound kings caught last year. Am I correct on that, that a 30-pounder is a possibility once again out there?
That is a very good possibility out there. We've got last year, I think our biggest lake trout was 25 pounds. Our biggest king was just over 22. So, yeah, it was game on last year.
I'd have to let Sean reel that one in for me.
Surprisingly enough, we had a lady from Iowa reel in a 23-pound lake trout last year, and she's a trooper.
Wow, wow.
Well, that's a lot of work then. So you're going to be out. You got one boat or two boats operating out there now?
Just one so far.
Just the one. Okay.
Yep.
But I know I went to your website last year. You got a beautiful setup there, a nice big boat, and looks like it's a great time out there. So as far as you're getting a boat out now, you're going to be starting in a week or two, do you anticipate?
I think the boat goes in the water on the 17th of April, and then we'll run it down to Racine, rather, and we'll be fishing out of Racine for sure by May 1st, maybe even a little earlier, depending on the weather.
Gotcha. Okay.
All right.
And if somebody wants to book a trip there with you, Sean, what's the best way for them to go about it?
They can look online to fishaddiction.net, and that way they'll get all the info, or they can give me a call at 414-852-8446.
All right.
All right.
Sounds good,
Sean.
All right. Sounds good, guys. Look forward to seeing you out there this year.
All right. Take care. Bye now.
And we've got Roger in Cudahy on the line, I believe.
All right. Good morning, Roger.
Good morning, guys. I was just going to chime in on the difference between the walleyes and perch, cooking them. I think there's not much difference as far as walleye and perch. Just about any size perch and small walleyes are almost, you can't distinguish between them. And I think a big reason why is the thickness of them when you cook them. You can take a big perch versus a 16, 18-inch walleye, and the thickness of the fillets is pretty darn close. And I think the reason why is they cook the same. You start getting into the bigger walleyes and the thickness on the side fillets, you got to keep them in the fryer longer. And I think the longer a fish sits in the grease, in the oil, is it takes on a little bit, more of a fishy, greasy taste. I think that's a big reason, the difference, because walleye and perch really, they're real, very neutral tasting fish, and they take on, that's why people like them. They take on the flavor of breading and what have you so much better. And I think that's a big reason why. And same thing with bluegills. They're a smaller fillet and they cook, very quickly. And I think that's a big difference between them.
Gotcha.
All right. Gotcha.
Well, you got me hungry, Roger. Got to get out there and catch me some of those.
Yeah, there we go.
All right. Thanks for calling, Roger.
You bet.
Okay, bye now. Okay, Danny, what did you want to ask me?
Well, as far as what was I going to ask you? Now I'm getting like you, Tom. You mentioned that you just like to eat your own perch fish. Have you ever gone anywhere, not just around here, but Door County? Have you ever gone to somewhere that you found a perch fry that you did like?
No. Well, no, because I don't order the perch.
Okay.
I don't order it.
And it's just because you think a lot of times they got too many bones. And
I guarantee you're going to have some bones. Yeah.
Okay. Because I went to
there are some places like Wentz up on Winnebago. Wentz, they make sure they take out the bones. They do.
Okay. There was a place that John used to really love up in Green Bay called Merrick's. In fact, I was friends with a guy named Jamie Merrick, who that was his family business there. But they had a good perch fry. And then there was another place in Green Bay I went years ago, and they had an all-you-could-eat perch thing. And I didn't have any problem with bones at all. And it was just a little greasy spoon, little diner.
Yeah.
And they just bring them out to you in a basket. It wasn't fancy, but they were good. And I can't remember whether the skin was on or not, but on perch, I kind of like the skin. I haven't had a problem with that at all.
Well, here we got an email for you, Danny. It says, this comes from James. James says, attention, Mr. Daniel Bush. Dan, pay the money. Buy the good insulated pair with boots. River water is always cold. Trust me, you will appreciate it, and you can always put on a pair of shorts or sweatpants or bare ass, laugh out loud. Take care, Dan. Hope to see you on the water, from James. So he's saying definitely spend the money, get the insulated ones with boots.
Yeah, I figured one of our listeners would have a good take on that. Mm-hmm. And I know Hodgman is a good brand. I know there's some other ones. I do know, Tom, though, I think storing waders is important. I don't think you're supposed to just roll them into a ball and throw them in a closet somewhere. I think you're supposed to hang them, because otherwise the rubber cracks and stuff.
Yeah, I got a pair of waders if you want them. They don't fit me anymore.
No?
No, but they're not insulated.
Oh, okay.
And they're just a plain old rubber waders. You know?
Plain old. Yeah, well, I think I appreciate that, Tom. I think I'm going to probably have to get some insulated ones. And then maybe I can use them for smelt fishing. And we got about a minute left in the show, but maybe in the upcoming weeks we can get some smelt stories going.
Yeah, that would be a good idea. But for right now, that's all I got for this week.
All right, man, that's all I got.
To all the listeners, thanks for listening. And God bless and stay free, everyone.
You've been listening to Wacky Walleye's Cutting Edge Outdoors. Get out there fishing, my friends. We'll talk to you next week.